Iron Corpses by David Annandale, read by John Banks. The blast was a roar beyond all storms. It was bigger than sound. It shattered coherence. It was war in paroxysm, and it tore the battlefield apart. It brought no triumph, only loss, and it stole a victory that had been in sight. The warsmith had seen it. Kapanos had seen the enemy falling. But then had come another fall, an immense shape from the skies, fire lighting the clouds, a shadow falling over the battle. And then the blast, the roar. After the roar came only the shriek of the wind. It scoured the murdered land, kicking up dust clouds so thick that day and night were indistinguishable. 5 days of wind, 5 days of the unending howl of a war's collapse into madness. On the 6th day, the wind dropped just enough that day returned in the form of a deep, withered twilight. It was time to abandon the Rhino. Kapanos was the only survivor. The troop hold had been breached. Sealed in the driver's compartment, he had held out this long, but the poisons of Talan were working their way inside, even here. His body temperature rose as his system fought to keep the weakened viruses out. There was no real shelter in the Rhino's blasted shell, only a more prolonged end. Kapanos could hear the wind whistling through the rents in the armored hull. It was taunting him. It was the sound of defeat and death. And it could outweigh him. For those 5 days, he had fought with the Rhino's systems, trying to coax life back to its engines. His struggle was futile. The tank was as dead as his brother's. But during those days of night, there had been nothing else to attempt. Now he had a choice of endings. He chose to go. Doing so would hasten his death, but he would act as though there were a real chance of shelter. His war was not over. Not yet. Kapanos slid the driver's door back and entered the troop compartment. His brother Iron Warriors were seated on the benches. They created an illusion, not of life, but of discipline. Though their bodies had turned to sludge, their power armor remained upright, as if their corpses were still ready to march into battle at his command. The dust and ash of Talan spiraled around their boots and fell upon their shoulders. It had already turned the iron gleam of their armor to a dun shadow. There was strength in the silhouettes, but it was slowly being buried. The wind would blow the dust into the Rhino until it filled the interior completely. Kapanos climbed through the torn side hatch and out of the tomb. The wind greeted him with its full howl. The dust clouds swirled around and past him, revealing and concealing the landscape. From one moment to the next, visibility went from 0 to 1,000 meters and back to 0 again. He saw the battlefield through shifting veils. Huge, tortured shapes were a deeper black against the grey. Those shadows were titans. Some had been melted into slag. They were now low, jagged hills. Others still stood, frozen in mid-combat. Allied and enemy alike, they had all died in the great roar. Between the motionless colossi were the tanks. The blast had hurled them across the plain. They lay variously upended on their sides and torn open. Kapanos had been lucky then. Not many had landed intact. The dust swirled over a portrait of a single moment of war, arrested in time. Kapanos was surrounded by towering gravestones. They were an iron cry of agony, preserved, extended, and given voice by the mindless shriek of the wind. Kapanos's visor display flashed its warning runes. The radiation levels were extreme. Even protected by his power armor, prolonged exposure would be lethal. The blast had also scoured the land of the worst of the viral toxins that had killed this world, but the contamination was still present. It was still reaching through his rebreather. His fever spiked, but his body was holding fast. The deliquescence had not yet begun. The clash of poisons had bought him some time. Not long, a few minutes, he guessed. He would spend every second fighting, and he would fight for a few seconds more. The situation was no different, except in degree, to any number of suicidal campaigns that his legion had faced. That was what the Emperor, in all his perversity, had decided the Iron Warriors were good for. How many times had Copanos and his battle brothers struggled through impossible sieges and over the landscapes of death worlds, leaving a wake of their own blood, only for Dorn or Gilliman or one of the other pampered favourites to swoop in and claim credit after the fact. If Copanos died now, his end would have no substantial difference from the rest of his life. At least he was free of the Emperor's hypocrisy.
"Do you call this a victory?" he shouted to absent enemies, and a demigod as distant as he was false. "You choose to destroy your own forces along with ours? That is weakness. That is why you will lose."
He started walking. He had a vague impression of a great shadow not far to his right. It was a destination. It was a goal to strive for, futile though it might be. He would have a purpose, even as his organs disintegrated. His boots kicked up puffs of ash that flew off in the wind. As he walked, he switched through the vox channels. He had been doing so for days, and the results were the same. Nothing but static, an electronic echo of the wind. Death in the air, on the ground, in the vast and tortured shapes, and in the ether beyond. The wind pushed against him, mocking. It shouted at him that he was alone, the last thing moving across the ruined battlefield.
"Look at me!"
he cried back. His voice sounded too thick, his breath rasped. There was liquid in his lungs. It grew thicker. They were beginning to disintegrate, turn into fluid, seeking to drown and suffocate him at once. Speech was difficult, but he would give voice to his defiance.
"Look at me! I live! I fight on! You will not stop us. You made us too well. We will march until we crush you!"
He coughed, straining for more of the deadly air beyond his suit's reserves. He marched faster. The huge shadow gathered definition and mass. He could distinguish the gigantic limbs from the trunk. Then the way before him cleared for a moment, revealing the Titan. It was a warlord class named Ostenso Contricio. Over 30 meters tall to the carapace and almost as wide, it was a hulking mass of immobilized destruction. Its arms bore great cannons pointed forwards. Copanos glanced in the direction the Titan was facing. Some distance away, there was wreckage. A battalion of tanks. Ostenso Contricio's final kill. As the dust rolled back in, Copanos saw a faint red flicker in the viewports of the warlord's head. Just one weak flash, but that was enough. A trace of power. Copanos could use that. He wasn't marching out of bitter defiance now. He was racing against his death. He had a hope of survival. More importantly, he had a hope of vengeance. He reached Ostenso Contricio's left leg. Overhead, above the Titan's waist, the lower access hatch was partly open. What was left of a Mechanicum acolyte lay halfway across the threshold. Robes in a vaguely human form were drenched in black organic soup. A pair of limp mechadendrites hung beyond where the head had been, as if trying to reach an imagined salvation. Death had reached into the Titan, and this fool had been panicked into thinking that it did not also await him outside. A fluid, multiplying pain was spreading out from Copanus's core and into his limbs. His movements were becoming sluggish. His joints felt loose and burned with acid pain. He didn't have much longer. Scaling the seized pistons of the leg, he hauled himself upwards towards the hatch, seeking hand and footholds wherever he could. Once inside the warlord, he slid the hatch shut. Adamantium armor, many times thicker than the rhino's hull, now shielded him from the poisoned world outside. All that remained was to purge the viral taint from the interior. His helmet lamp lit the confines of the dark space. There were more biological remains here. He guessed they had been servitors from the limited, specialized tool limbs that sat in the sludge. Further in was another door. He grasped the wheel at its center, turned it, and hauled it open. He crossed the threshold into the engineering deck. There were more Mechanicum dead here, tech priests who had stayed at their posts until the end. Their servo skulls littered the floor, eyes dark and wide, as though in shock. Kopanos staggered to a workstation that faced the core of the Titan. It was beside a large cluster of ducts running to and from the Warlord's reactor shields. The station screen was dark, and one of the liquefied operator's servo arms was still resting against the keyboard. Kopanos moved the limb aside and examined the controls. The pulse from the blast could well have shut down the Titan systems. Perhaps the priest had been in the process of restarting the mechanical heart of the god machine. Something had begun, or at least survived, for that light in the Titan's head to have been possible. Kopanos found the circuit controls. One of them was open. He turned the others on, one by one. A groaning, hissing life returned to Ostensor Contritio. Lumen orbs strobed, then settled at a dull crimson glow. The deck and walls shook as the Titan's heart struggled to beat once more. He would grant it life, and in return it would give him the same. The hollow, automated voice of the machine crackled from the emitters. Primary systems activating. Reactor failsafes engaged. The blessings of the Omnisire be upon us. Warning. Warning. Malfunctions in secondary and tertiary nodes. Locations 117 to 135. Kopanos examined the tech priest's servo arms, found a plasma cutter, and fired it up. He examined the ducts, eventually tracing one that vented the power plant's heat upwards into the exchange system at the rear of the carapace. He deactivated the failsafes and cut through until a rush of superheated, radioactive steam burst from the pipe. Within seconds, it had filled the engineering chamber. Warning! Warning! Extreme hazard! Heat spike detected. Coolant system failure imminent. Alarms howled. Kopanos dropped the cutter and began to remove his armor. Warning! Warning! Radiation levels in excess of working maximums. Evacuation advised for all organic personnel.
Poison. Against poison, he gasped as the scalding death hit his exposed skin.
He stood in the middle of the cloud, a fresh clash of pain erupting in his body as his gen-enhanced biology absorbed the radiation. His melanchromic organ went into overdrive, his skin pigments blackening instantly. He breathed deeply, and the burn reached into his lungs. It scoured the slow rot from him with an even more deadly agony. Poison against poison. He stood in the lethal cloud for a full minute before the dose overwhelmed his ability to process toxins. The virus was dead, and he began to die in a new way. He dropped to his knees and vomited out a black, stinking mass that began to eat its way through the deck. Then he stood again. Little more than the force of his own will kept him conscious. The steam was damaging him much faster than he could heal, but he waited another full minute before he reached for his battle plate once more. If even a trace of the virus remained, he would be done. His mucronoid began a last-ditch attempt to preserve him. A waxy shield oozed from his pores, sealing him off from the lethal atmosphere of the chamber. He fumbled with the armor, his fingers growing slick. Carapace, chestplate, power pack. One piece at a time, he took sanctuary from the radiation. His vision graying from exhaustion and pain, he closed the manual redirect valves to reroute the exchange system leak. When he was done, the radioactive fog lingered. He felt as though it had penetrated his skull, and his senses were overwhelmed by a grand mosaic of pain. He was one shock away from falling into a sus-an coma, but he stood still and tried to force the darkness from his mind. His work was not done. He had shelter, but it would serve no purpose if he could not fight.
Iron within, iron without, he muttered.
Both had carried him this far. They would see him back into war. The Loyalists no doubt thought that they had turned the Iron Warriors' victory into a mutual defeat. All they had done was throw more of the same hopelessness at the Legion that it had battled and surmounted for centuries. He would show them their error. He would show them his Legion's iron. The vow made, his pain took him into the night. He fell unconscious even before he hit the cold deck.
Engencia Meridius.
Crackling woke him. An electronic scrape in his ear. The internal vox was active. There was a gasp, someone drawing a deep breath before finding the strength to speak again.
Engencia Meridius, we have power again. Are you well?
The woman's voice was that of a mortally wounded warrior. Kapanos dragged himself back to the workstation in silence. He was no adept of the Mechanicum, but he was a warsmith. Though he was not privy to the most arcane mysteries of the Titans, he knew how to shape a battlefield. He knew how to shape war itself. So he would make Ostenso Contritio answer to his will, one way or another.
Meridius,
the voice called again. Kapanos was surprised by the strength of it. The speaker was dying. The alchemy of desperation and hope was the fuel for the cry. He would answer, but not yet. He succeeded in running a rough diagnostic of the warlord. Power appeared to be reaching most quadrants. The potential for movement and attack was there. That left the most important motive force, the princeps. If this woman was only one of the moderati, there would be little he could do. He would be stuck in an immobilized shelter, no better off in the long term than in the rhino. He worked his way to the upper levels of the carapace. He found the pods of the moderati minoris. They were closed, but they had not been sealed from the contamination of the virus. The gunners were dead. They left behind ruined uniforms and the stinking slurry at the bottom of their pods. Kapanos wrote off the secondary weapons.
Meridius, why don't you answer?
Kapanos reached the reinforced hatchway to the Titan's head. Outside it were the remains of another tech priest, twin servo arms slumped against the door, and the metal marred with scratches and burns. Another sign of mindless panic. What had the adept hoped to accomplish? The bridge space beyond was a sanctuary only as long as the door did not open. Kapanos turned to the comlink on the wall to the right of the door.
Meridius is dead, he said.
At first there was only silence. Then the voice spoke again.
Who is this? I am Kapanos, and I am your only hope. Identify yourself.
Princeps Ben Rath, she answered, without hesitation, recognizing the deep reverberations of his voice.
You are of the Legiones Astartes. Are the Moderati Majoris still alive?
Kapanos asked.
I'm not sure. They were an hour ago, but they haven't spoken since. They don't answer anymore. You are unable to confirm one way or the other? I can't move, she said. When the pulse hit us, there was a surge before the power went down. The neurofeedback was devastating. I am paralyzed.
What about your connections to the Titan?
I'm not sure. Until the power returned, I was linked to a void. I can feel its life now, but not the machine spirit. Ostenso Contritio is as paralyzed as I am.
The fact that Ben Rath was severed from the machine spirit was to be expected. Kapanos had seen the system breakdowns in the diagnostic. The machine spirit was still alive, but isolated.
I saw light in the cockpit earlier, he said.
The head has enough reserve power to function in isolation for an extended period.
You didn't eject.
What purpose would that have served?
None,
he agreed. Good. Benrath was fully conscious of her situation. Separating the head from the crippled body of the Titan would only have shifted the position of the survivors in the blasted land. There were no retrieval teams coming, not for anyone. Whatever events remained to play out here, they would do so cut off from the rest of the planet.
Princeps, Kapanos said, I can end your paralysis. I can give you back your purpose.
The phrasing did not come naturally. To offer rather than to command went against his training and his being. But he needed her consent, along with that of the Moderati Majoris, assuming either was still alive. If they were this close to death, a struggle of any kind could be lethal.
You can restore Ostenso Contritio to us.
She sounded understandably skeptical.
Not exactly. I can restore you to it.
He waited for Benrath to deduce what he meant. He gave her some space to approach the idea on her own, to assimilate its reality and its implications. He was standing still, but all the same, he was reshaping the battlefield.
We have no neural bus, no amniotic tank, Benrath said.
She knew what was coming then, and was already halfway to acceptance.
I am aware of that.
You are able to proceed without one?
Yes.
And the process is irreversible?
Would you ask that of a Legion Dreadnought, honored Princeps?
No. Forgive me. The weakness of my body is not the weakness of spirit.
Then I will begin. Know this. The interior is highly radioactive.
I understand. Once I open the seal, there is no going back.
There never is, Kapanos thought. Everything is irrevocable.
There was a metallic clunk and a hiss of air as the circular hatch parted in the middle. The two halves slid aside. There was little room for the warsmith to enter the compartment. The two Moderati Majoris sat in thrones to the rear of the space, flanking the one occupied by the Princeps in the forward section of the Titan's skull. The armor-glass eyeport looked out over the broken landscape. The wind had dropped a little more since he had entered the Titan. Obscuring dust clouds still billowed over the field, but he could see further now. The graveyard of gigantic corpses was endless. On and on and on went the ranks of iron monuments, preserved in their rage. But he also saw flashes of distant gunfire amidst all the death. He was not the only one seeking to bring the corpses back to a semblance of life. He had won time for himself. He wasn't dying anymore, but he had stopped one countdown only for another to begin. A new battle was coming. The embers of the war for Talaan were struggling to reignite. He would not be found wanting. He checked the Moderati. They were unconscious, their breathing labored, but there was enough life there to suit his purposes.
Are you there? Benrath asked.
Kapanos could see the top of her shaved skull above the back of her throne, and her hands resting on the ornate arms. She didn't move. Her paralysis was as extensive as she had said.
I am here, Kapanos told her.
He began his work. It took time, and he had precious little of that. Even so, he shut that concern from his mind and focused solely on the task. He had a foundation upon which to build. The interface cables connecting Benrath and the Moderati to the Titan's manifold were still viable. He moved back and forth between the Warlord's skull and the workstations of the engineering deck. He never set foot beyond the Moderati stations. He never saw Benrath's face. The Princeps was a voice behind a throne, growing ever weaker. He required her consciousness a bit longer, though, and prepared the diagnostics to track the flow of neural data. The machine spirit was there, silent but raging. To give it a voice, he had to find the point where the communications had been severed.
Speak to it, Kapanos urged Benrath over the vox when he was ready.
I can't.
I know. Your failure will be instructive.
I hope so.
She fell silent. A moment later, traceries of power lit up the workstation screen. A few seconds later, Benrath gasped and the screen dimmed.
Princeps?
Kapanos asked. No answer. She was unconscious. Not dead, her life still registered on the screen in the form of faint pulses from her cerebral cortex. They barely registered, their paths fading into darkness almost immediately, but her effort had shown him the problem. Strong as her mental command had been, it had run into a damaged interface tangle one level down from the skull. Kopanos found a maintenance hatch not far from the location of the interface. He opened it, expecting to find a crawl space much too small to accommodate him. Instead, there was a narrow catwalk that twisted into the gap around the Titan's reactor housing. Kopanos moved inside, surrounded by pistons the size of pillars, cables as thick as a Thunderstrike's cannon. The connection stretched into the gloom above and below him.
"I am coming for you," he called out to the raging machine spirit. "The Princeps bent you to her will. I will do the same. You seek to vent your wrath? Good. You will do so at my command."
The damage was not hard to find. Above his head, to the right of the catwalk, was a cluster of torn and fused cables. With the tools he had salvaged from above, he cleared the pathways as best he could. Some lines were torn beyond repair. Some connections had melted together in a mass that could never be differentiated. He was satisfied when he made his way back to the primary workstation and examined the new energy tracks that appeared. He had not expected to restore all the pathways between Benrath and the machine spirit to their original state, nor did he wish to. He had merely created the possibility of communication. Now he would shape the nature of that dialogue. He would shape the battlefield. It took him another day to make his preparations. It was now the 7th since the blast. On this day, there would be no more rest for the dead. In the skull of Ostensor Contritio, the Princeps and the Moderati Majoris were still unconscious. They did not stir as Kopanos amplified their life support and performed rough intubations. The mechanism that had kept them alive this long would now preserve the spark of life in their bodies for as long as the Titans survived. It would also hold them prisoner. He was most careful as he worked on Benrath. He would have rejected the word gentle to describe the operation. It was precise. It was calculated. Unnecessary and premature shocks could easily defeat his purposes. His approach was as tactical and merciless as any siege he had ever led. In truth, what he was attempting was a siege. Little by little, he embedded her into the machinery. He could not install more ports into her skull and spine, but he jacked more cables into the existing ones. The resulting drain on her mind could shatter the body, so he increased the energy load even as he reduced its need. He augmented. He cut away. He made the Princeps one with the God Machine. And when he was ready to open the links between Benrath's mind and the machine spirit of Ostensor Contritio, she awoke. He was standing between her and the window ports, and she saw him for the first time. She saw the colours of his armour, and her eyes widened.
"Traitor!" she hissed.
Kopanos leaned in, savouring this fragment of justice reclaimed from the inferno of defeat. Corrupting a loyalist titan was a fine act of reshaping and a successful siege. But he wanted the Princeps to know. His victory would have its witness, an eternal one.
"You trusted blindly," he snarled. "So did we, once, but we learned our lesson in time. Have you?" "I think not."
She was too weak to struggle. Even so, she tried. The skin around the sunken orbits of her eyes tightened as her will raged against a body withered and bound. Kopanos waited. With his task on the verge of completion, now he did have the luxury of time. He wanted to see Benrath realize the full extent of her powerlessness. He did not regard his triumph over a single loyalist as petty. His wrath was as justified as hers was futile.
"You will be defeated," Benrath whispered.
"Not by you," Kopanos grunted. "No, not by you."
He completed the last of the connections.
"And so I keep my promise," he added,
then restored the neural link between the Princeps and the machine spirit. Benrath screamed as her consciousness flowed away down into the manifold. It left her body behind. The flesh became nothing more than an organic bag, a conduit of fuel to keep the mind alive. She was cocooned in cables, vanishing into the mechanism of her throne, and only her face was visible. Its final expression, before it fell into the slackness of living death, was one of utter horror. Kopanos knew why. He could not experience the fusion that Benrath was undergoing. He could not conceive of it, but he understood exactly what he had set in motion. Before the blast had shut the Titan down, the machine spirit's fury had been forced into compliance by the great will and discipline of the Princeps. But she had been weakened, and he had stripped away the manifold defense mechanisms, leaving Benrath vulnerable to a machine spirit so maddened by its injuries that its sole purpose was nothing more than unceasing, indiscriminate destruction. Given free rein, however, it would send Ostenza Contritio on a rampage as uncontrolled and unpredictable as the winds of a hurricane. Benrath was now immortal, whether she liked it or not. She was locked in a perpetual struggle against the anarchic rage of the machine. Kopanos had linked her mind to those of the Moderati Majoris, comatose but still neurologically viable. She retained just enough strength to channel the power of the Titan. She could direct the warlord's movements, but she could not choose their purpose or their target. Kopanos had reserved that power for himself. He stood at the rear of the bridge space, looking beyond the thrones through the armor glass eyes. The control mechanism he held was crude, little more than a collection of electronic prods, each with a different function. It would be sufficient. He depressed a trigger, delivering a synaptic shock to Benrath. He impelled her to walk. And so, Ostenza Contritio walked. The warlord lurched with the bone-shaking growl of an iron city on the move. For the first time in 7 days, the Titan's earth-cratering steps resounded throughout the machine. Ostenza Contritio began its march through the land of corpses. In the twilight distance, appearing through the curtains of dust, other half-glimpsed giants were moving. Kopanos saw the flash of giant guns. Death had not yet had its fill on this battlefield. And nor had he. The Vox was still consumed by static, but Kopanos had confidence that he would know brother from enemy. He depressed triggers to the left and right, and the Titan's great arms rose, weapons cycling up. He had no illusions. He was entombed within the warlord as thoroughly as Benrath was. He would never leave this cursed place. But his war was not over. He was in command of a terrible wrath indeed. This was a triumph of a kind. It was the one that he had sought. And so he wondered about the new dread that descended over him as a battle lost and finished now lumbered once more into a grey nightmare unlife. He felt the shadow of the future fall over him, the shadow of a war as futile as it was eternal. That was Iron Corpses by David Annandale, read by John Banks.